more successfully. Jordan Teague was now an exceedingly rich man, although, as Ryan knew damned well, none of this wealth had ever rubbed off on Moxon. All in all, a pretty inglorious and unedifying career that Ryan was planning even now to move to its swift close. Ryan still found it barely credible that Teague should end up like this. He recalled what Fishmouth Charlie had said about Teague's not knowing what the goddamn time was these days. Damned right. He looked to be brain-blasted on booze and happy weed, stuffed to the gullet and beyond with food. A gross mountain of flab, fit for nothing but the boneyard. Ryan almost felt sorry for him. Almost. There were others in the room with Teague. Two women were together at the foot of the pyramid structure, sitting on the lowest step. One was naked, wide-hipped, with pendulous breasts. Ryan judged her to be well on the other side of 30. The other was younger. She wore a top, but no bottom, no skirt or pants. They looked bored, dispirited. It occurred to Ryan that trying to jolly Teague into raising his flagpole these days must be a full-time occupation, and wearing on the nerves. Slumped at Teague's feet was a strange and wild-looking man, at this distance appearing elderly, though Ryan could not be sure. He looked to be medium height and very thin. Sprawled as he was, it was difficult to tell exactly. He was clad all in rusty black, except for an off-white shirt. His hair was long and lank and gray. Ryan couldn't see his face clearly because the man's head was in his hands. He seemed to be crying. Certainly his shoulders were shaking as though he was in the grip of a fit of the ague, although no sounds came from him. Could be he was laughing, but Ryan doubted it.
Come on, Ryan! Let's hit him!
Wait. Suddenly, Teague lashed out with his foot, the tip of his boot catching the old man at the side of his head and toppling him. The man tumbled down the steps, a wild sprawl of arms and legs. The younger woman jumped out of the way as he banged past her, landing in a heap on the rugs. The girl didn't even turn his way, but went around to the other side of her companion as though nothing had happened.
I told you. You listen to me, Doc, when I'm talking to you. And get up off your tush.
The man, called Doc, struggled to his feet, stood with his back to the curtain, his shoulders bowed. He was still trembling.
Well, I fear I did not hear you, Mr. Teague.
Don't listen at your damn trouble.
You are perfectly correct, sir. It is indeed a failing of mine. I live in the mind, sir. As you know, there is another country there. In the mind, memories of a better life, a richer existence by far.
Lot of crap you talk, Doc.
Indeed, sir. Yes, indeed. Indubitably. I
don't know where you fucking are, Doc. That's what's wrong with you.
Oh, no, sir. Believe me, I know where I am. Indeed I do, sir. I am in hell. I have often thought it. It is the only explanation.
Yeah, you and me both, Doc. Here, Cord had you down in the pens again, huh?
That is so.
Get it up, did you? I said, get it up, did you?
Yes.
Well, more than I can do, Doc. Fuck knows when I last got it up. Just lost the inclination. Too much like hard work, you know what I mean? Hey, you bitch.
Neither of the women took a blind bit of notice. Teague gripped the chair arms and heaved himself forward.
Bitch!
The younger of the two women got up unconcernedly and mounted the pyramid toward him. At the top, she stood beside the chair, gazing blankly out across the room as Teague reached out a flabby hand and fondled her buttocks, his fingers disappearing from sight. He heaved himself around and thrust the fingers of his other hand up inside her top, began groping at her hidden breasts. Still, the woman said nothing, did nothing, her face expressionless. Teague suddenly sank back into the chair and flapped a hand irritably at her. She turned, descended the steps, pulling her top down. She sat on the bottom step again with her companion.
You know, Court's gonna kill you one of these days, Doc.
I am dead already, sir. It is the only explanation.
He don't like you, Doc. That's why he likes to humiliate you. If it wasn't for me, you'd be stiff.
I was taught, sir, that theories must always fit the facts, not facts theories. It is the basic tenet of any academic discipline. And the facts are simple. This is hell. Therefore, quod erat demonstrandum, I am dead. I have been dead, sir, since...
He began to tremble again, a terrible feverish shiver that took hold of his entire bony frame, as though invisible hands had gripped him and were shaking him violently. Slowly, he sank to his knees, his head held in his hands, his shoulders quaking. Teague sucked at his cigar, as though oblivious of what was happening below.
No way out for you, Doc. Corn ain't just gonna put you to the hogs one of these days. He's gonna feed you to them.
No, that is where you are wrong. The locational progressions are simple. There is no problem there. From A to B to C and onward, or from P to Q and then back to, let us say, G. So you see, there is indeed a way out. Or should I say, many ways out. But finding them, my dear sir, that is altogether a different matter. The redoubts are there, in situ. Many of them. But, and I put it to you, where is there?
Shit.
This is the point. And I fear I have to say the answer is, for the moment, lost. No doubt it will reveal itself. No doubt they will reveal themselves. At times, the fog clears.
The old man stood up suddenly, began to prowl in front of the pyramid, his hands clasped behind him. Backward and forward, backward and forward.
The fog. Sometimes, if let loose, it's quite powerful. Feedback effect, as I recall, though difficult to explain, and quite arbitrary. Of course, they had no real conception of its power. They said they had, but they lied. They lied much of the time. They treated me like an animal. It was disgraceful, as though I were a puppet. They had no right to do what they did, and I informed them of that fact. And for all their honeyed words, I was nothing to them, less than nothing. A subject, an interesting experiment. It was wicked. Wicked! God should have struck them dead! But through the fog, my dear Teague, sir, from A to B, and then to roar more anywhere. Find the fog, sir. There is your solution, your way out. So many possibilities.
Shit, Ryan. We're wasting time. Let's do it.
Wait, damn it. There's something...
Chauncey! Hackett!
One of the mirrors on the other side of the pyramid swung open, and two goons came through at the run. They had slung M16s, and they went separate ways around the pyramid, right and left, and converged on the wild-eyed old man. They were both grinning death's head grins. The old man stopped pacing, seemed to shrivel into himself, his face gray.
This fucker's off again. Take his toys from him.
No! Please! I implore you, sir, not again! Please!
Come on, come on. Take him out, hand him over.
Doc stared wildly around, as though looking for some means of escape. Then he swallowed hard, his shoulders slumping. He reached slowly into a pocket of his filthy black coat, then held out his hand. Ryan peered up at the ceiling, the only way he could see what was there. Two gray spheroids.
All right, let's do it. But don't hit the old guy.
Why not?
I'm not sure, but don't. I want him.
You're the boss.
They slammed through the curtain. Ryan to the left, Hunniker on his right. One target apiece. Simple. Except that the two women bolted. Their ideal course of escape would be off to the side, out of any line of fire. Instead, blind panic turned them both into something akin to chickens with their heads lopped off. They dove in front of the two sec men, yelling in a frenzy. One tripped on a rug, the other tumbled over her.
Fire blast!
Ryan swore and dove to one side, as a sec man, quick off the mark, unslung his piece and fired what must have been half a mag in his direction, the rounds flaying the thick curtains behind into wildly flapping cloth shreds. Ryan was firing the lava, its butt smacking into his pelvis, but his aim was wild, and rounds hammered into the mirrors behind the pyramid, the glass exploding into a million flying shards. Honecker hadn't fired at all. She was rolling across the floor toward the wall in a desperate scramble as bullets from the second guy tore air above her head. She was now regretting that she hadn't jumped into this one with an automatic piece that did not have the ferocious blast power of the Mac. The Mac was fine for blazing out whole groups of targets with a light squeeze of the trigger, but lousy when it came to the one-man job, and especially lousy when that one man was surrounded by others you did not want to hit. She let the machine pistol go and dragged an ancient KP-7 from inside her jacket. She rolled fast and scrambled around onto her stomach, fast sighting as her head rose from the rug, and the compact, snug-gripped P-7 barked twice. The first round missing her man by mere centimeters, the second, because of hand quiver on the roll, whipping at his coat.
Bitch!
The man jumped to his left, stumbled and fell. A third bullet from the P-7 tearing air where he'd just been. He rolled too and took a dive like a sprinter off the block into the comparatively calmer waters on the other side of the pyramid, joined half a second later by his companion, who'd had the same idea. That idea was not to face up to Ryan and Honecker at all, but to get the hell out of the room in one piece by diving through the still-open mirror door through which they'd arrived, except Ryan was ahead of them. Where he was, he could not hit them, either of them, but the door itself was another matter. He sent three rounds into it, smashing the glass into a wild kaleidoscope of candle-reflected glitter and punching the door into its frame. It was a standoff. Neither Ryan nor Honecker had a direct bead on the two goons, who were now crouched behind the pyramid. On the other hand, Ryan, from where he was positioned, could destroy anyone who tried to make for that doorway. The two goons were in a slightly better state, although only very slightly. They at least could snipe if they'd a mind to, or poke their pieces up and over the nearest step treads, and blaze off in the general direction of their targets. And by doing that, they could at least stop Ryan and Honecker rushing them from the other side. Ryan bared his teeth in an icy grin as he stared at the reflection of the two men, one of whom was staring back. Their eyes met. The goon wasn't grinning. He looked as though his bowels were about ready to go. That did not, however, make him any less dangerous. Ryan's gaze roved. The two women were now trying to burrow under the rugs. The old guy called Doc seemed to have disappeared. Ryan couldn't see him anywhere, had not caught his bolt route.
Where did the old guy go?
Don't know, Ryan. Probably got through that door before you blasted it.
Shit.
To Ryan, Doc seemed like a wreck, but somehow not completely off his rocker. What was all that shit about the fog? The guy called Kurt, back at Charlie's head, from what Charlie herself had said, rambled on about fog. Ryan didn't trust coincidences, even in this random, arbitrary, and seemingly haphazard life. His psyche nudged him, whispered that there might be something odd here, something worth following up. The old coot hadn't just been talking about any old fog, and if Charlie was to be believed, neither had the guy called Kurt. Common sense, however, informed him that there were 10,000 natural fogs in the Deathlands per week, somewhere or other, and probably this Kurt bird was vision-ridden from fever. A fog with claws? Still, there was from A to B to C, and the possibilities, and who were they, and what had they done to him, and what was a redoubt, and why did that old man talk so weird? Ryan stared up at Jordan Teague atop his pyramid, cringing into the wingback chair with a mad and pop-eyed look about him.
Ryan? Teague, you fat bastard. You're the best target I've seen in years. Even a blind man could take you out.
Ryan? Jesus, what are you doing? What is this? We gotta talk, for Christ's sakes. This ain't the way to do business.
You're in deep shit, Teague. I swear I'm gonna give you to the cannies. A bunch of them could live off you for a month.
My God, Ryan, you gotta tell me. I'll do anything. You gotta tell me what you want. I'll do it. I'll do it.
You're disgusting, Teague. However many monstrous deeds can be laid at your door, at least there was a time when you were in control. At least you used to command a certain amount of respect as a hard man who'd carved himself a niche and stayed put when others had fallen. You're nothing now. Less than nothing.
Ryan put up the lapa.
No, Ryan! No, don't!
And pumped three rounds into the top step of the pyramid, just below Teague's twitching boots. Teague tried to turn himself into a fat ball as the bullet smashed straight through the construction, bursting more glass the other side.
Honecker, the pyramid's not solid. The base, flay it!
Honecker reached for the Mac-11, rolled onto her stomach again, aimed for the second from bottom step, and squeezed off a withering blast of rounds that turned her immediate target into an explosive spray of blown-out wood chips, before powering subsonically through the hollow interior and ripping out the other side, only slowing marginally as they zip-drilled the flesh, sinew, and bones of the man crouched there. He was shoved over bodily by the punishing impact, most of the Mac's mag transforming him into a mere torso from which blood sprayed. The second man, yelling in panic, as he too cottoned on, jumped from cover, M16 hammering wildly in Ryan's direction. But Ryan was on full auto now, and his fireline caught the man and followed him, slamming him back against the mirror wall in a twisted body tangle. There was a microsecond silence, and then Ryan was on his feet and sprinting back to the curtain, throwing it aside.
Cole, come on, we're clear.
Whew, shit. Been busy?
There's a door back there. Check it out. Look for an old guy. Long hair, black gear. Nail any goons, but don't nail him. All right, fat man. Down, and make it snappy.
Ryan watched as Jordan Teague clambered down the steps of the pyramid. As he reached the floor, he pulled the blue robe around him defensively. It didn't meet in the middle. Ryan went close, poked at the sagging gut with a lapis barrel. Teague's beady little eyes shone with fear.
You fat double-crossing bastard. I'd have take you apart.
I ain't done nothing, Ryan.
That, as someone said to me not too damned long ago, someone who's now dead is a double fucking negative.
I don't know what you mean, Ryan.
It means, fat man, you have done something.
Oh, please, please, Ryan, don't just tell me. What have I done?
You had our train nerved out, and you've got the traitor. And now I have you.
Yeah, Court did say, but I was against the idea, Ryan. I was against it. You got to believe me.
You wanted the train for nothing. You simply iced the whole bunch.
A wildfire of fury boiled through him suddenly, and he rammed the lapa barrel into Teague's stomach, yanked it back, flipped it, and smashed the butt into the throat of the tottering goblin figure. Teague fell back and sprawled ludicrously half on, half off the bottom step of his pyramid throne, clutching at his neck, his face scarlet. Ryan flipped the gun again and held it down at Teague, aiming at his gut, his finger tight on the trigger, his face squeezed into a frozen mask.
Ryan?
Thanks, Hunniker. Teague, when this is over, you and Strasser. You're just lucky I got Hunniker here, you fat fuck. Now, who's the old man?
Old man?
Old man, old man. The old buzzard you called Doc.
Oh, I don't know, Ryan. He just appeared one day, coming to town. Yeah, back maybe longer.
Who is he? What's he do? Where's he from?
I don't know. I don't know nothing, Ryan. I thought it'd be a laugh, you know, to have him around. Court don't like him, makes him do things. Said he was a doctor, acted real strange. Still does. Goes off in a fucking dream. Talks, I don't know, another language, Ryan, long words. Some guys did something to him, took him off from someplace. But he never said where, when, why. Can't understand the guy sometimes. Talks to you like he's talking to a bunch of kids. Shit, I don't know, Ryan. That's it.
What about this fog?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's looking for fog. That's what he said. Looking for fog. A special kind of fog. I don't know what the hell he means, Ryan. He says that on the other side, life's better. He's burned out. Rads have eaten his brain away.
Didn't look like he had the plague to me, Teague.
No, he's fit enough, yeah. Brain fucked is all.
Those two gray balls he had? Those eggs or whatever they were?
It's all he had with him, Ryan, when he come into town. You gotta believe me. Didn't have nothing else. Some kind of metal goes crazy when you take them off. Court gets off on doing that. Taking him away from him. Guy has a fucking fit.
Cole suddenly reappeared, his face set. Samantha the Panther came through the curtains at the same time.
Nothing out back, but there are lights heading up this way.
Yeah, I just talked to JB and he said the same thing.
Lights. Yeah, okay. Take Teague up front where we came in. I'll talk to JB.
Ryan ran back to the entrance hallway, then up the stairs to the second story. Rintel emerged from the shadows and pointed to a room. Ryan padded across to where JB was hunched against a window frame. Ryan peered out. The arcs were still flickering, but in their nervous illumination, Ryan could see what JB had seen. Two trucks had reached the front of the house below and were stopping, a buggy sweeping in from behind. A tall, gauntly built man, bareheaded and black-garbed, emerged from the front of the buggy, followed by two sec men. He stared around, peering to the left and right as though looking for someone.
Strasser.
Yeah.
And they don't know we're here. He's looking for the guards we iced.
Ryan re-rigged the Lapa and brought out his Sig Sauer. He sighted on the roof-mounted spotlight of the buggy and put a round into it. The light went dead. Strasser jumped, his head jerking up as his hand reached at his coat.
You're dead first, Strasser. Whatever happens.
Ryan, might have guessed you'd still be loose. But what can you expect when you employ imbeciles?
I'll go down. Get Hen and the rest. Get the door open.
Good.
You killed a lot of our people, Strasser.
Yes?
Tell the trucks to beat it. And tell them not to mess up when we come out. Get your men out of the buggy.
Why should I do that, Ryan?
We got Teague.
I see. Well, if I may be allowed to...
Don't move from that spot, shithead.
Strasser stood still, pointed at the trucks, began talking quickly and quietly to the two men with him. One of them went to the buggy. Ryan watched as goons began climbing out of the buggy, five in all. The trucks revved up, backed off from the house, and turned, disappearing down the driveway into the darkness beyond the arc light's beams. Ryan could see their headlamps cutting into the blackness. The men who had come from the buggy began to back away from the vehicle onto the grass.
JB!
Below him, Ryan saw a light spill out from the opening door, and he turned and raced back across the room into the corridor, down the stairs, the Sig still clutched in his right hand. He shoved the Sig at Teague's head.
Let's go.
All right, all right.
They moved out of the house toward Strasser and the buggy.
All right, Strasser. We go to where the trader is, we go to where the train is, and then we go.
Fortunes of war, Ryan. So near, and yet so far. Ah, well.
There was something wrong here, but Ryan couldn't figure out what it was. He knew Strasser. Strasser was too cool. Far too cool. Then there was a muzzle flash from the buggy interior, and Teague's head exploded like an overripe fruit, spraying him with blood, brains, and homogenized bone. Teague lurched, collapsed into Ryan soundlessly, and the dead bulk of the man shoved him groundward, knocking the Sig from his grasp. There was another, longer burst of fire, and Strasser waved his arms.
Hold it!
Ryan heaved at Teague, rolled him off, as icy phantom fingers insinuated themselves into his stomach. Then Strasser was above him, a handgun gripped in his gloved hand, its barrel inches from Ryan Cotter's good eye.
Fire blast.
Don't even twitch, shithead. Thought you had an ace, hmm? Tough titty. Now you're going to be telling me about all those ingenious booby traps you have. Jordan was superfluous, Ryan. And so were you.
They hadn't bothered to take Ryan's watch, and the thought pounded his brain like hammer blows that time was running out. But they'd taken the Sig, the Lapa, his grenades, the contents of his belt pouches, and the four sticks for the Lapa. All the obvious stuff. And although they'd left him his belt, they'd checked it thoroughly. What they had not checked was his thick-soled combat boots and his long, fur-lined coat. They'd gone through the pockets, all of them, the obvious places, but once they'd finished that task, under Court Strasser's gimlet gaze, they had handed it back to him, joking that where he was going, he might get cold. Ryan didn't see the humor. And they had not checked his scarf, the white scarf of thick silk he'd found at the bottom of a trunk in the attic of an old abandoned house on the borders of the swamplands down south. It was a fine scarf, an elegant scarf, a scarf that at once surely belonged to a man of substance, who had used it for those very special occasions in the pre-nuke days. The silk was so smooth and so thick and so heavy. Especially so heavy now. And they had left him that, probably because it had no meaning to his searchers, since the concept of dressing up for those very special occasions was utterly alien to them, something that had no meaning whatsoever. The way they stank, it was clear these guys hadn't washed in years, let alone dressed up. They had not taken JB's hat, either, an error they might come to regret. While they were being searched, upstairs, here in what once had been the Moxon City Bank and Loan Facility Corporation building, JB had obligingly taken off his old wide-brimmed fedora, held it upside down, the crown gripped in his left hand, and inserted the fingers of his right hand to flick up the sweatband, just to show there was nothing concealed behind it. The man pulling weaponry off and out of him, denuding his pouches, groping at the lining of his brown leather jacket, ran a finger around the inside of the hat suspiciously, peering intently at it, staring up at JB's impassive, bespectacled face, a face made all the more funny-looking because the specs had been salvaged from some surviving product dump years ago and distorted JB's features. The man had shrugged and watched as JB pressed down the sweatband again and plopped the hat back on his head. Then he returned to the far more important business of searching him for concealed cannons, bazookas, howitzers stuffed down his pants. Foolish man. Strictly an amateur. Even so, allowing for the stupidity of Strasser's goons and the blinkered comprehension of Strasser himself, Ryan had to admit that this was a tight spot. It would need more than a mere modicum of luck and a good stiff breeze to get them out of it. His ranks were now drastically depleted. That treacherous burst of fire from the concealed marksman in the buggy had left him J.B., Honecker, Call, and Sam. As a wild card, he had Hovac waiting at Charlie's, but it was a pretty damned useless wild card, all things considered. Hovac had no means of knowing where they were and what had occurred. In any case, she was hardly in a position, even if she did discover their whereabouts, to rescue them. All she would know was that they were late for the rendezvous, and time was ticking away. Time. Ryan had no intention of checking his watch, because that would give Strasser the idea that there was some kind of time factor here, some kind of cutoff Ryan knew about that he didn't.
But at a rough calculation, Ryan figured that maybe 2 hours had passed since Sam had entered Charlie's with the grim news.
And that in turn meant they had roughly 2 hours to get their shit together and out. Say, 1.5 in case of accidents. Not a lot. Not one hell of a lot. Ryan eased away from the wall he was lounging against.
You know, Strasser, we can still come to some kind of deal on all this.
You're in no position to bargain, Ryan. You're mine. So is your train. All mine.
You got us, but you don't have the train. Touch the train and you lose it. You lose the lot, Strasser. You think we wire up the old booby trap here and there to keep off predators? The old spark bomb to give a guy a shock? If you want the truth, every damn vehicle in that train is set to blow if you so much as breathe on it. I tell you, it's like a house of cards. Tamper with one vehicle, and the whole lot goes. It'll be the biggest blowout since the nuke.
What a talent for exaggeration you have, Ryan.
Try it.
You are going to tell me how to render your clever traps useless, Ryan.
Not me, pal.
Pain can make a man change his mind.
Some men. But with me, you're gonna have to work at it. There comes a point with some guys where pain suddenly doesn't matter.
Bravado, Ryan. Sheer fucking bravado. You're no different from anyone else.
Suck it and see.
Strasser was probably correct. Maybe he was no different from anyone else. But from his past, he had a memory that always kept itself deep in the lower layers of his consciousness. It surfaced rarely these days. When it did rear its head, it was always at night's end. Ryan would erupt out of his bunk, yelling at the black horror of it. An experience of pain and betrayal so terrible, so soaked in blood and despair, that it had seared both his body and his soul. And in the searing, like red-hot steel thrust into the ironsmith's water barrel, it had tempered him, hardened him, beyond the normal human limit.
Perhaps we are to take your other eye out.
For a second, skeletal fingers of fear enclosed Ryan's heart in a vice-strong grip, clutching, squeezing tight, sending ice through his veins. It was the ultimate terror. Maybe his one single most vulnerable spot. The one threat that mocked all his courage and turned cool objectivity into gut-churning panic. He kept his face swept of all but the most neutral of expressions, but inside, the doubt gnawed. Had Strasser patched into his psyche, begun to display muti precog? Was he a mind reader? He rejected the thought, almost at the same instant as it flared up in his mind. Strasser was as superficial in his thought processes as his men were in their search for concealed weaponry. Inside that skull was a warped and twisted brain that simply homed in on and struck at the most obvious chink in a man's or woman's armor. A guy had one eye, threatened to rip out the other. It was as simple as that. Ryan rested an expressionless eye on Strasser.
That won't do you a hell of a lot of good, Strasser. Once you've done it, you've shat your wad. But be my guest.
Give the sucker to me. Let me work on him. He'll squeal.
Ryan's eye flicked to his right. The room they were in was, he guessed, the lower level annex, a part of the old bank